From Breezewood to Greenville, White Oak to Ephrata, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, straight party voting, appellate court elections, and next year's statewide row office races are on the minds of our Capitol Watch crew. Carl Marrera, Rebecca Euler, and Matt Briette are here for a roundtable discussion. And the lieutenant governor is in the news. Of course, the reason is not good. I'll have a town hall commentary on why the office should be abolished. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania has launched a new tool to help voters and taxpayers get a better feel for what is happening in the state capitol. CAP's Accountability Index focuses on legislation that impacts taxpayers and bills that will affect the future of the Commonwealth. CAP favors free markets and personal responsibility. Legislation and amendments that run afoul of those guiding principles are subject to inclusion on the scorecard. CAP's goal is to give members of the General Assembly advance notice when they plan on scoring a floor vote, an amendment, or even votes related to procedures. There may be times when those votes happen quickly and CAP is unable to make that happen. However, lawmakers should be treating every vote as something that voters are watching. The Accountability Index will be updated in as close to real time as possible. Voters will be able to determine how their lawmaker is doing throughout the year. To see how your senator or representative is voting, check out the Accountability Index at empowerpa.org. The Commonwealth Foundation has done a deep dive into the new state budget and has found millions of dollars in earmarks hidden in the fiscal code. Earmarks are pet projects of lawmakers that receive special funding. Theoretically, earmarks are no longer allowed. But arcane and precise wording in the fiscal code creates a pathway for such pork barrel projects to get funded. According to Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation, the language is specifically crafted to get around a constitutional prohibition against giving taxpayer dollars to specific private organizations. The foundation's complete report can be found at commonwealthfoundation.org. And former Congressman Chaka Fattah recently appeared before a federal judge asking for a reduction in his 10-year prison sentence for public corruption. It did him no good. U.S. District Judge Harvey Bartle III refused to reduce the disgraced congressman's sentence, saying, quote, "The court must signal to the public that your crimes are unacceptable." Fattah misspent both charitable donations and campaign funds, diverting them to personal use. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has ordered Pennsylvania's 67 counties to replace their voting machines before next year's presidential election, but he vetoed funding to pay for the new systems. Here to discuss the governor's contradictory actions are our Capitol Watch crew, Matthew Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business, and Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Matt?
Welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening in Harrisburg for you. I am Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, and I'm joined by my friends and colleagues, Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs at Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association.
Good to be with you, Matt.
Hey, good to have you, Carl. And Rebecca Euler, who is a legislative director at the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the Pennsylvania chapter. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here. Thanks, Matt.
Well, it is summertime, and your wallets are safe because the legislature is out of session until September. So we kind of have a reprieve on some of the silliness as we see the things falling out from the budget. And there are a few items that the governor vetoed that we're going to have to see what happens on them. One in particular was funding for new voting machines. And the governor vetoed that, and he did so because of it ending straight party line voting. That was his argument for it, because there were a number of other measures in that piece of legislation that were reforms that he supported. But simply because it ended straight party line voting, he decided to veto that legislation. Something that I wasn't aware, I don't know if the two of you were, that Pennsylvania is only one of eight states out of the 50 that actually have party line voting. So we're kind of an outlier on that. What's your takeaway, Carl, on the governor's veto? And then it really leaves in limbo some of the funding for new voting machines at the county level, kind of another unfunded mandate from Harrisburg coming to local government.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, to your point on the veto, I think it came to the surprise of the legislature. I think that this was kind of out of left field for the governor and something that I don't think many of the members of the General Assembly saw coming. And then to one of your latter points, I think straight party line or straight ticket voting in Pennsylvania has been longstanding, sure. But when I'm at conferences or talking with colleagues from other states, oftentimes they're really taken back by the fact that even exists here.
Yeah.
While it is something that we see as the norm in Pennsylvania, to your point, Matt, it is certainly not the norm nationwide.
Well, and you know what the arguments that are made, at least for Governor Wolf's veto message, they're really non sequiturs, as I heard them saying that this would hurt low-income or minority populations. It was really a condescending comment to say that, not allowing them to just vote straight party line, that they're not smart enough to pick individual candidates. But I think one of the best arguments we certainly heard from folks is that, look, if you're down ballot and you have worked your tail off to run for whatever office. I mean, even if it's things like prothonotary, which I have no idea what the prothonotary even does, but don't you deserve a consideration by someone going into the ballot box, even if it's just not to vote in that because you don't know who they are, instead of just doing a partisan, push of the button and just saying, I vote for all D's or all R's. And I think it would affect, I think the analysis is that, look, this would hurt Republicans in high Republican areas just as much as it would hurt Democrats in high Democrat areas. But it just seems that fairer elections would say, nope, you know what, if you're going to show up and vote, you need to consider every race and not just push one ticket related just to the party. That to me just seems fair, and it was going to cut both ways, against and for Democrats and Republicans, not just one party. But I think it was a pretty condescending veto message saying that low-income and minority communities simply aren't smart enough or need some easier way to get in and out of the voting process.
I agree, Matt. It really does promote what's essentially an uninformed vote. For those lower
That's
offices,
right.
It makes it a lot easier to vote for candidates that you haven't done the research on, you haven't really looked into, you haven't taken the time to understand those offices. It makes it a lot easier to vote for those candidates. And I think there's a certain it's incumbent upon voters to understand who they're voting for. And to take away straight party voting like most states have already done, I think really incentivizes voters to really think about the choices that they're making, especially down farther in the ballot. And you're right. It doesn't make sense to me why the governor would oppose that.
Yeah. And I have to admit, there have been times I've gone and go, oh, my goodness, I don't know who any of these candidates are. And it would be silly for me to just either pick randomly or just simply pick by party. And so I think it's just fair to the candidates that you don't have to vote
right.
in every, race.
You can choose not to vote.
Well, and with Governor Wolf's veto, this has put the burden on the counties in order to pay for these voting machines, things that we're talking about tens of millions of dollars. Mm. Governor Wolf, as we are recording, is trying to do an end run around. The legislature borrowed money for this. So we're going to have to wait and see how this plays out
Right. I think it's important to recognize with the voting system replacements that the governor actually created this problem by decertifying the existing voting systems that are out in the counties right now. He made the decision to decertify them. I think it was last year. He has the ability to certify and decertify voting systems through his Department of State. And they actually made the decision to decertify systems that don't have paper audit trails. And part of, you know, some of the allegations that were floating around is that, you know, the Russians hacked the last election, and this is to prevent Russian hacking. Well, one of the fallacies of that argument is that these voting systems are not connected to the internet. They are completely separate. They're required to be separate. They're not connected. They can't be hacked. Unfortunately, he made the decision to decertify them and sort of put the counties in this crisis that they have to replace them by next year, which is also a presidential election year, of course, which makes things even more difficult.
Well, and I think there was a pilot program, if I recall, in Montgomery County, and they had a lot of problems in the primary races. So they haven't worked out all these glitches to something that's supposed to be smoother, more secure. Right. And so we're going to have to wait and see what they ultimately come out with here.
And when you're talking about these machines and the counties and funds and all of the, I mean, ultimately what's going to happen? It's going to result in counties probably having less machines that are probably going to be more inconvenient, and which is more disenfranchising.
Yeah. Longer lines
at the polls that take
in a,
you
in
two
a presidential
and 3 hours.
Election right. year that we're going to see this rolled out.
Or straight party balloting.
Yeah.
I mean, which is more disenfranchising, really? And the governor has chosen. I think he's chosen poorly.
Well, you're listening to Capital Watch. I am Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, talking with Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs at the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director at NFIB, the Small Business Advocate here in Pennsylvania. So shifting gears a little bit, some folks may not be fully aware, but we do have some statewide elections here in 2019, and some really important ones, some that really fly under the radar for many of us, predominantly because it is the courts that don't come into a lot of our lives, you know, thankfully, right?
Yeah.
Thankfully, we're not having to go before a judge, and most citizens are not. So it's an easy branch of our government, an equal branch to the executive and legislative branches, that has a lot of and tremendous power, but we tend not to pay very close attention to it. And this year, there are two open seats on the Superior Court. Pennsylvania has two appellate courts to the state Supreme Court, and the Superior Court is the civil and criminal court where issues predominantly related to individuals and businesses will go through, and then appeals can be made to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court from there. There's also the Commonwealth Court, which is where a lot of decisions that are made regarding government and people litigating against government. But there is an 8-7 Republican Democrat split right now. These two seats will likely determine the majority of whether the Republicans maintain it or Democrats control it, which it's not so much of a voting body in the sense that a majority can control decisions because of how they hear cases and rule on them. We know, Carl, that the courts are important, right? I mean, 2015 should be that warning sign that we need to pay attention to the courts.
You know, so often we hear it's a political cycle. It's not a political cycle. There's really no such thing as an off political cycle.
No.
Because, unfortunately.
right? Because, I mean, even in the years where you're not electing congressmen or United States senators or presidents, in those off years, you have local and judicial races. And when it comes to the importance of of government in our daily lives. I mean, even though we might not necessarily appear before a court, their decisions do have an impact on our everyday lives and how legislation is interpreted and how legislation then is ultimately carried out. And of the different nominees, and you said there's two open seats. There will be two Democrats that will appear on the ballot and two Republicans that will appear on the ballot. All four that are appearing on the ballot in November received the nomination of their party for the primary. So you have former Allegheny County Councilwoman Amanda Green Hawkins and Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas Judge Dan McCaffrey on the Democratic side. And on the GOP side, you have Chester County Prosecutor Megan King and Cumberland County Judge Christy Lee Peck.
You know, what's interesting is that the one Democrat that received the endorsement, Amanda Green Hawkins, was not endorsed or not recommended by the Pennsylvania Bar Association. So she went before this panel of lawyers who make recommendations, and they said she is not fit.
That does not often happen.
It does not. I mean, she's not. She is a lawyer for the United States Steelworkers Union. So she's been just a labor attorney. Apparently, hasn't been in court in over 5 years. Has a background that certainly doesn't suggest she's ready to be a statewide judge. But that's who Democrats have nominated.
And keep in mind that organization that you're referring to, this is not appearing before like a PAC board or a political action committee board seeking an endorsement or anything. This is really just to understand and appreciate the competency of your understanding of the law and to be able to hold that position and to get a vote of no confidence from a board like that is a really big deal.
Yeah, the other three candidates were recommended by the Bar Association. But yeah, you're right. This is a big deal because they are evaluating, does this person have the demeanor? Do they have the thought? And to be not recommended, I think, is a serious issue that we'll see if the voters hear about that much. But of course, yeah, in 2015, this was where the Republicans did not put up a good showing. And there were three Supreme Court seats that were up, and the Democrats took all of them. And we know the result that we're seeing the fruit of that election. And certainly everybody, the entire country, knows about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision overturning the maps for congressional district lines, which reset how we elected our congressmen and women this last election, and did so by empowering a Stanford professor out in California to unilaterally draw maps without anybody's approval. And so this is the result of a court that and interestingly, five of the sitting seven Supreme Court justices came from the Superior Court. So when we're talking about the importance of these elections here in 2019, frequently it is the Superior Court that serves as the bench, pun intended, for the Supreme Court. So we have to be paying attention to what's going on here. So we encourage our voters to get to know these candidates, King and Peck on the Republican side and Green Hawkins and McCaffrey on the Democrat side. All right. Well, shifting gears with looking into 2020, because we all know that Pennsylvania is still the keystone state when it comes to national elections. We are the largest swing state in the country. We're the fifth largest state overall. But, you know, California, New York, Republicans really have no shot of winning those states.
Right.
Texas and Florida are still fairly Republican leaning, strong leaning. And then there's Pennsylvania. We are that kind of purple state that mm-hmm. could go either direction. And so we know that a ton of money is coming into Pennsylvania for these elections. But we wanted to highlight just a couple of races that will be important for our future that don't automatically pop up on people's radar screens. So one of those races that is on the radar screen is the reelection of Attorney General Josh Shapiro. who is up for re-election in 2020, but everybody is pointing to him wanting to run for governor, because we know that AG, while it stands for Attorney General officially, unofficially it stands for aspiring governor. And so, Carl, how has the Attorney General been with regard to business issues that are of interest to you? How has he operated as the chief law enforcement officer in Pennsylvania?
I would say that, especially from a job creation standpoint, you look at what's the number one driver for Pennsylvania's industrial renaissance right now, and that's very clearly the natural gas industry. And to say that the Attorney General's office has been friendly to the natural gas industry would certainly be a lie. That he has been I don't want to say impossible to deal with, but there have been a number of decisions and a number of attacks, I would say, by the Attorney General's office on the natural gas industry. And quite honestly, when you look at the facts of the case, I'm not sure they're necessarily on the Attorney General's side, but there's something that seemed to be politically popular with the base that he's going to be trying to capture for an attempt and a run at governor or some other higher office.
Well, we know that he really made some national headlines in going after the Catholic Church, and a number of other states followed suit with similar proceedings, allegations, indictments, or reports on the Catholic Church. I just wonder if that's going to be a winning message in Pennsylvania, particularly the western part that certainly has large Catholic populations. But I guess we're going to have to wait and see. Does he get a challenger in 2020? Because everybody is pointing to him running for governor again in 2022. Then, of course, we've got the retiring Auditor General, who's already announced he's running for Congress against incumbent Representative Scott Perry. That will be an interesting race. I think very competitive this last go around, and folks are expecting it to be the same here in 2020. Well, boy, we've got a lot more that we could talk about, and I'm sorry we don't have any more time. But let's revisit this. Carl, where can folks find out more about you and PMA?
You can visit us at www.pamanufacturers.org.
And Rebecca, how about NFIB?
We're at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Well, for Carl and Rebecca, I'm Matt Briette at Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com and join us once again on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Pennsylvania's relatively useless office of lieutenant governor has been in the news lately. Generally speaking, when the lieutenant governor makes headlines, the reason is not good. And so it was with the latest kerfuffle. Aside from waiting for the governor to go to the great state house in the sky, the only actual duty of the lieutenant governor is to preside over the state Senate. Even that job is frequently delegated to the president pro tempore of the Senate, as the lieutenant governor is off doing other things, like making Pennsylvania safe for pot smokers. The current second banana, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, has only been on the job for 6 months and hasn't quite gotten the hang of how to run the chamber in an orderly fashion. There are rules of procedure which were unanimously agreed upon by all the senators at the beginning of the session. The left, however, is fully bought into the old saying that rules are like pie crusts made to be broken. Such was the case in late June when Senate Democrats were on the cusp of losing a vote to lard on an additional layer of welfare benefits. A dust-up ensued that degenerated into chaos on the Senate floor, with Republican leader Jake Corman red-faced and shouting for order, while Fetterman wandered about as befuddled as a liberal at a Trump rally. Thus was the frustration of the left on full display. Unable to win through the regular process, with which they at first agreed, Democrat lawmakers turned to protest and performance, playing to the compliant news media in an effort to advance their agenda. That aside, it was yet another embarrassing chapter in the history of Pennsylvania's woe-begotten office of lieutenant governor. That the current occupant of the office could not even competently perform his one and only constitutionally prescribed duty speaks volumes about the fecklessness of the office. Then again, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman has not exactly immersed himself in the mastering of the rules of the Senate, something majority Republicans have now directed him to do, lest they strip him of his powers. He has instead been gallivanting around Penn's Woods on a so-called listening tour in advance of efforts to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. This is curious in that Fetterman is a strong proponent of legalization, so he might listen, but he will not hear. The 67-county tour had all the hallmarks of a campaign swing, which, truth be told, is the real reason for Fetterman's road trip. Let us not forget that Fetterman's first run for statewide office was for United States Senator in 2016. He lost that primary to Katie McGinty, who went on to lose to Pat Toomey. That seat comes up again in 2022, the same year Fetterman's term as lieutenant governor ends. It's not hard to connect the dots. The office of lieutenant governor, however, has not historically been an effective stepping stone into higher office. Setting aside the anomaly of Lieutenant Governor Mark Schweiker becoming governor in 2001 upon the resignation of Governor Tom Ridge, no lieutenant governor has moved on to a higher office since 1966, when Raymond P. Schaefer was elected to succeed Governor William Scranton. Other lieutenant governors, including Raymond Broderick, Ernest Cline, William W. Scranton III, and Mark Single, have run unsuccessfully for higher office. Since John Latta became the first lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania in 1875, only Broderick and Arthur H. James, who was elected lieutenant governor in 1926 and governor in 1938, have gone on to win the top office. In another historical anomaly, Lieutenant Governor John Cromwell Bell, Jr. became governor for just 19 days in 1947 after Governor Edward Martin resigned to take a seat in the United States Senate. Interestingly, no Pennsylvania lieutenant governor has ever gone on to serve in the United States Senate. Controversies surrounding Mike Stack, the incumbent Fetterman ousted in last year's primary election, have resulted in legislative efforts to amend the Pennsylvania state constitution to eliminate the office. Such proposals would resolve the succession issue by placing the president of the Senate next in line for the governorship and allow the body to operate on its own. The time has come to end the spectacle and the cost to taxpayers of an office that is not only useless, but has proven to be a distraction to the actual function of governing. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS-AM in Uniontown, WRDV-FM in Warminster, along with WRNN-FM and WKNB-FM in Warren, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.